This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
Welcome to the Counter Narrative Podcast, a show designed to change the way we talk and think about education. By sharing stories of successes and triumphs, we aim to challenge the dominant narrative that often negatively portrays our disenfranchised populations. I'm your host, Charles Williams, an urban educator for more than 15 years, a current school principal in Chicago, an educational consultant, an equity advocate, and the co-host of Inside the Principal's Office. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to the Counter Narrative Podcast. As always, I enjoy you popping in here and sharing space with me and the guests here. If this is your first time, welcome to the show. I hope that you enjoy what you hear today and that you'll come back and listen to another episode, or maybe you're returning because you know just how fun these conversations are. And, you know, I have to admit, this show is about 3 years old, a little over 3 years old. And the guest on this show should have been like in year one, because he and I have been connected forever. We've been sharing spaces forever. We've been talking forever. And I was doing a review of the guest and I was like, how have I not had him on? It just feels like we've connected in this space. So the guest that I have today is an educator, is an author, is a speaker, is a guitar player. He has some musical talent here. So welcome to the show, Brandon. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Long overdue for sure.
Yeah, way overdue. Like, I'm serious. When I was looking, I was like, wait a minute. I swore we've been on the show together.
We've definitely attempted to schedule this numerous times, but here we are.
Here we are. And, you know, I would have been curious to hear, like, what our conversation was 2 years ago versus now. You know, our journeys have been interesting, to say the least. But before we go any further, why don't you share with the listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do now, and kind of your pathway through this educational journey?
Absolutely. Well, I am an 18-year teacher. I am the product of two teachers. My mom and my dad were teachers for 35 and 37 years. Neither of them ever became administrators. They were teachers. They made it all the way through. They probably would have kept going if they didn't decide to retire. But I have to say that, you know, that energy flows through me and through my career. And I kind of try to always say that I picked up where they left off. But now I'm in Westchester County, New York. I'm in a suburb outside of New York City in a very diverse school district in a very diverse area. And I am a dual language teacher in an English classroom. So I'm the monolingual side of that. I am the monolingual bilingual educator, I call myself sometimes, because I do not speak Spanish, but I love the work that I get to do, and the challenges that I face on a regular basis is something that keeps me going and keeps me going strong. And I also get to bring my dog to school every single day. Her name is Peaches, and she's part of a social emotional learning curriculum and this crazy idea that my students had and I kind of ran with. And now 4 years later, after bringing her to school, it's been a complete game changer. So it's, you know, in addition to that, it just, you know, experiences like that to develop relationships and connect with students is definitely something that I'm really passionate about. And over the pandemic, I decided to write a book. You know, I'm also a professional soccer coach in my spare time after school hours. And the pandemic left me with no soccer fields to go to for a while. And I said, you know what? I need to finally write that book that I've been saying I was going to write for a long time. And one thing led to another, and the book came out, which led to speaking and a podcast and consulting and coaching and amazing things that I never would have thought was going to happen in this career 18 years ago.
So, you know, it has been, I know we were talking a little bit about your book. So what is the name of your book? And I know that we'll be able to find it again soon, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the title of my book is based around what I believe that the goal, the ultimate goal of all educators is to unlock unlimited potential in all whom they serve. So the title of my book is Unlocking Unlimited Potential.
And it is a great book. And I'm not just saying that because Brandon is on the show. In fact, in one of my sessions, it is part of the session. I literally just say, hey, I've borrowed this from Brandon's book, this formula, but go read his book, go find it. And so definitely check it out. So Brandon, I think earlier, right, in our pre-conversation, you kind of hinted at it in the introduction here. You know, you've been in the classroom forever, right? Your parents were in the classroom forever. And yet you are, and I shouldn't say yet, but you're writing books and you're speaking and you're doing all these things. And it's like, wait, teacher, all of those things. And we kind of talked a little bit earlier about sometimes the perceived notion of the need for leadership titles and roles. So can we dive into that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, you know, it's something that in my work recently with working with a lot of educators who are going from an idea that they want to become something bigger than just a voice inside the classroom. They want to grow their voice outside of the classroom and amplify the voice of others with some of their amazing ideas, whether it's writing a book or speaking or a podcast or blogging or writing more. The one thing that I think I continue to see that is holding them back is they just don't feel like that they have moved on enough in their career because maybe they don't have the title of a principal or a superintendent or a director or something like that. And so I think, you know, I think it's really important to remind educators that we lead every time we step in front of students. We lead mm-hmm. every time we plan to deliver something to the people around us and inspire them, whether it be students or whether it be other teachers. And I think the importance of leadership not being about a title is really something that has always resonated with me. You know, I'm someone who went and got a doctorate several years ago. And as I was getting the doctorate, everybody was saying, oh, well, you know, this is the transition to becoming a school leader, a school administrator. And I just kind of always saw myself as someone who led from within, as someone who led from within with great ideas and with, you know, the idea to take on challenges and just try my best to have that confidence to do things, because it's always at the end, it's about leading students to become their best version of themselves. And so I think when we think about some of the things that we are destined for, some of the things that we're looking to do in the future, I think sometimes we put titles on a pedestal. And I think mm-hmm. it's important for us to realize that we're all human beings. Yes, some of us have gone on and got different levels of education and different certificates and different titles. But at the end of the day, the human beings that we are is really what's most important, because if we are full of that confidence and we're full of that fire within and we're using our passions to lead to greater good, then I think that that's what it's all about. And I want to remind educators how important that is.
So I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm sure that you've been asked this question already. So you have a doctorate and you're in the classroom, right? So I guess what the question is, what drove you to get this doctorate if you had no desire, or maybe do you at some point have a desire to leave the classroom and pursue administration?
You know, it's funny you say that. I've always been asked that question everywhere I go. And, you know, for me, it was just about being able to become a better writer, about being able to research, about being able to conduct research that was meaningful and fruitful and that was full of things that I was passionate about. And to me, it wasn't really necessarily about, well, this is gonna push you into this part of your career. Like I said earlier, I've always been a leader in my career, I do also, I've been an entrepreneur. I've also had several small businesses, but one small business that I've had for about 15 years is being a professional soccer coach, which has also led to a full service soccer organization that I've been involved with. So I have always been able to lead in that capacity. And I've always had, you know, 25 coaches underneath of me. We go out into different towns. I create curriculum. I'm also a certified instructor for the United States Soccer Federation. So for me, that was always the thing, was I actually am an administrator, but I'm an administrator in this part of my career. So sometimes people don't really see it because I may not be in a school leadership position, but my leadership position that I have in the organization and in the business that I'm a part of has always been there for me. And if I were to step into one of those other places, a principal or a superintendent, I would have to step away from that sport that I'm really passionate about, because I really also get the opportunity with a lot of the work that I'm doing is I also get a chance to work with a lot of athletic teams, a lot of sports teams, college athletes that I get the chance to work with. And I have several contracts with different organizations where I get the chance to work with coaches and players and work with them on developing leadership. And this kind of came out of nowhere, because I didn't really think that this was something that was going to be able to do in my career. I didn't even realize this could exist in my career until I wrote this book, and until I started to put together workshops and I started to get it out there, and people started to, and I started to speak with different teams, and they started to ask for more. Because what was happening was, a lot of times we assume when we have a college athlete and that college athlete is named a captain, a lot of times what happens is we assume that they have the leadership skills to do that. And what a lot of the coaches and a lot of the organizations that have been coming to me is that they're finding that they don't. And they're also finding that they need some sort of coaching and some sort of result-oriented approach to be able to go to that next level with their team, so that they can all bounce ideas off each other. Because at the end of the day, everybody needs a coach. And so that just kind of keeps me further and further away from going back into that place and going back and getting the, you know, the school business or the school district leadership. So that's what's been amazing, is that the profession continues to grow, the opportunities continue to present themselves. And so being able to continue to stay close to the things that I'm most passionate about has led to these amazing things that just keep growing and growing and growing.
There's a few things that you said there that I want to touch on. But before I do, because I'm hearing this, you know, that you are passionate about soccer. I'm about to head off to Kansas City to do a keynote out there. And so I'm thinking, you know, Kansas City, soccer, Ted Lasso, right? Like, so I just had to ask, like, are you a fan? Two questions. First, are you a fan?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay. So second question, because I was like, second question relies on first question. Second question is, favorite character and why?
Ted Lasso is my favorite character. And the reason why, I know that's such a like a an easy like answer, but the reason why is because I'm a, like I said, I'm also a soccer coach in my own experience. But you know, he's the one thing is that he never responds negatively to all of the things that are happening, and he always sees the positive light within all of it. And for him to be able to do that, especially with the storyline that it is, that he's like a guy who really knows nothing about coaching soccer, and the fact that, you know, I won't give away the spoiler, but the fact that he finds success within it all is, you know, is really what's most important. You know, it's funny that you say that, because actually, like, in my newsletter this week, and I know you did this way back when, and I was kind of inspired by it, you talked about like leadership tips we could learn from Ted Lasso. And in my newsletter this week, just after watching them and after watching you know, the show all the way through to the end, is I kind of came up with like the three most important things. And I think, you know, three things that I take away from Ted Lasso are, number one, he always takes the high road. Number two, he says it. He says he's a work in progress. And I feel like that's such a quality line. And then the third part is the Diamond Dogs. Like, just the idea, and for all the listeners out there who know Ted Lasso, you know what I'm talking about, but it's this time where the coaches come in, they close the door, they bark like dogs, but it's a time where when someone needs to come in and air out what's on their mind, and they unite and they give advice, just as men sitting in a room. And I think it's just, really a phenomenal show. And even someone who's like a huge soccer fan, they did a tremendous job. You know, even bringing in Pep Guardiola, who just won the treble in England and won with Manchester City. They just did an incredible job actually showing what it's like to be a footballer and showing what it's like to, you know, to be inside the locker room. But also they gave this really comedic kind of representation of, you know, the sport and the passion that the sport brings to people.
You know, it's funny. That's one of the pairs of socks that I just packed up for the trip with the Diamond Dog socks. So
that's, you know, awesome.
I'm like, this could be a whole nother episode. I got to bring myself back, because I was like, there should be just a conversation. Ted Lasso lessons. Let's just have that conversation. We got to pencil that one.
So good. I was inspired by when you did it. Wait, and that was a while. You did that like in season one, I think, actually.
Yeah. You know, yeah. My friend introduced me. He was like, there's the show, you got to watch it. The guy reminds me of you. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I was watching it, and I remember, you know, that was the famous, like the boots joke. And yeah, you know, so it was like, I love it. Right. And so if you ever find yourself right in the pineapple percussions, just watch the show. It'll make sense to you. Now you got to go watch it. So bringing it back to leadership, I've been utilizing this definition that I came across recently from Brené Brown, who I'm starting to become a fan. I understand why people enjoy her. But she defines leadership as this idea of seeing the potential in people and processes, right? And making sure that we could bring those things to light, you know, help to manifest them. And so you're right. Like, if I'm a teacher in my classroom, I could see the potential in my students, right? I could see the potential in the processes of instruction in my classroom, and working so diligently to make my students successful, to help get them to that level, just as, you know, administrators are with their students, I mean, with their teachers. And I think about if that's the idea, right? If that's the definition or a definition of leadership. Going back earlier, you mentioned that people get so caught up on these titles, right? They put them on these pedestals. And this is not a new conversation. We've been having this conversation forever. So why do you think that is? Why do you think people still get so caught up in whatever their title or, like, you know, I tell people I've served as a principal for the last, 8-9 years. And I just stepped back into being an assistant principal. And it's interesting because I always find myself needing to qualify when I say, well, I'm an assistant principal. Well, how long have you been doing that? Well, this is my second year. And I always find myself needing, but I was a principal for like the last 8 years. Right. And
yeah.
And I, true. And I kick myself every time I'm like, you don't need to do that. And yet I am, right? I'm one of, like, so why do you think that's so prevalent within our society, within our spaces?
Well, I think, you know, it's twofold. Number one, we're a society that always measures ourselves against others, whether it's looking on social media, whether it's, you know, seeing, you know, whatever other people are doing and seeing the world in which people portray onto others through these, you know, these digital vehicles. But I also think the other side of it, too, is sometimes, especially people, I think especially like teachers that are in the beginning of their career, I think when we are in the beginning of our career, we tend to look up to the people who are those titles, who are our administrators, who are our leaders. And I think it takes some of that experience as a teacher to kind of level the playing field. And I think once you kind of gather that experience, you start to realize, like, hey, you know what? I've been through hell and back. And I've been through some really crazy stories, and I've lived a really crazy story here as an educator. And now I'm prepared for what's to come. And I think that, you know, I think that we should be looking to our leaders for that leadership. That's what their role is. But I think what happens is, and it also goes with, like, you know, titles and awards and certificates. Like, I think sometimes that we measure ourselves, look to measure others by that, you know, whether a person has 10 million followers or whether a person has, you know, the Teacher of the Year award or the Principal of the Year award, which are all amazing awards. But there's so many great educators out there who've never received an award. There's so many amazing teachers out there that have never received any of these accolades. And I think that it comes from within, because just because someone is a school leader doesn't mean that they're a leader. It doesn't mean that they're a great leader. We all know who those great leaders have been in our careers. And when you look at those people, there are certain qualities that you realize, like, I could go to that person for just about anything. That person really was present. That person was really there and was not just a problem solver, but they were also someone who would just listen and always be responding and offering, you know, support, and maybe not always the answers and not always someone who could fix something, but they were someone who you knew would do something, whatever they could, to support you, and would also make you feel equipped to be able to overcome those challenges. And that doesn't take a title. That doesn't take a school leader who is labeled as the principal always to do that, because just like with teaching, there's some good teachers and there's some bad teachers. With leaders, there's some good leaders and there's some bad leaders. So I think what it comes down to in the end is that there's that human side of it, being able to get to that point in your career where you understand that you're a human and you're willing to fail in front of that person because you honor their feedback, because you know that this isn't a gotcha moment, you know? And I think that that's most important, that when we're looking at leadership and we're looking at titles, understanding that, hey, maybe I'm 36 credits away from being a school principal, but maybe I just didn't choose to go down that road. But if you're a leader, you want your teachers to feel confident enough to make those decisions, to be able to lead within and lead others and connect and collaborate and problem solve, so that they can continue to do the greater good for the people in your organization.
I love that those examples and those definitions. I think about an amazing teacher I have, or had, I should say. His name was Mr. McKerney Donald, and I know sometimes he listens to these, so I hope he's listening to this one. And he was a phenomenal educator, but, you know, he didn't have the paper, right? And so he didn't have the certificate, but when he got into that classroom, he was one of the best teachers that we had the best test scores, had the best, best relationships, you know, best attendance, best everything, you know, but the title wasn't there. And you're absolutely right. There were people that would never have imagined that title wasn't there. But unfortunately, you know, in some aspects of our lives, those titles matter, right? And so people are like, well, you don't have this, then I'm sorry, you can't be here. But you're right. It goes both ways. You have amazing people without the title, and you have people with the title who are not, unfortunately, so great. So I want to bring that back to something that you had mentioned earlier, right? That even though you're not a school administrator, doesn't mean that you're not a school leader, but you talked a little bit about this other aspect in your life where you're an administrator. And it brings me back to this idea I've been toying with about that which drives you and that which drains you, right? And like you're saying, hey, if I wanted to, I could become a school administrator. Right, I have the credentials, I have the knowledge, I have the experience, I have all the things that would allow me to become a school administrator. But if I did that, it is not something that would drive me. It is something that would drain me, because now I wouldn't be able to do those things that truly drive me. So I'm curious, in your experience, do you know, I guess, people who have done that, or can you attest to that, this idea that I shoot so hard for that title simply because of the title, or maybe the things that I assume come along with it, but maybe that wasn't what was best for me.
Yeah, you know, and I think sometimes it's not, you don't always have the answers in front of you when all is going down and when all is happening. And, you know, for me, like I said before, like at the beginning of this pandemic, if you would have told me I'd be doing half of the things that I was doing now, I would have told you were crazy, because sometimes we just have to, you know, I say this all the time, but sometimes it's God's plan. And sometimes we have to sit back and continue to work hard for what's in front of us. And sometimes I feel like people chase too much too often because they're constantly looking for the grass is greener effect. Like, oh, if I was a principal, then everything would be better. If I had a book, then everything would be better. I think it's important, and I do this a lot in the workshops that I do with educators very often, is understanding the foundation of unlocking unlimited potential begins with understanding and redefining why you do what you do, understanding the power of your story. And once you understand the power of your story, the answers are all within it. So if you think back to your story and the reason why you became an educator, and as you start to really pick and think about those mentor teachers, those teachers that you thought were just the greatest teachers that you ever had, and you start to think about your personal school story, what it was like for you in school, and what you wanted better and better for others. And for me, what it was is I had a very tough experience as a student. I had an IEP that was a mile long, and I didn't really enjoy school. It was a very challenging place for me, and I felt like I was always 2 years behind everywhere I went. And so for me, my story means that I needed teachers in front of me to connect, to inspire, to motivate, to think outside the box. And so that really is the reason why I still teach. And my love and my passion for the game of soccer started when I was a young kid. I remember going to the World Cup in 1994 when it was in the United States. And it was just, the game has been in my blood since day one. And so to remove that from my life would be something that would be very challenging for me to get rid of. And part of the reason I was successful in school was because of sports and because of soccer. And as I left, like literally on graduation day from undergraduate, standing in my attire for graduation, I received a phone call offering me the coaching job that I still have right now, 18 years later, and 181 wins. And I received that call. And it turned into a very successful coaching experience. I met some of my best friends that I coach with, and it ended up being literally the neighborhood next door to the school in which I teach right now in a different district. And so that just kind of lined up all of those pieces. And so because I know my story, that drives me. It doesn't limit me. And so because that story drives me there, my why is clear in the fact that I love to be in the classroom, and I'm continuing to be in the classroom. And yes, do I wish that the pay was a little bit more? Do I feel that all educators are underpaid? Yes, I do. However, I'm fortunate because I was able to put together these other pieces of the business that I have now to be able to keep me going and keep me finding places to survive in, you know, this area that's one of the most expensive places in the world. And, you know, I'm still happy with my job. I love being in the classroom. I love being able to work with students. And I think if you removed me from that equation, I would have a really challenging time being someone who would have to lead in those places. Because for me right now, it's about that helping, you know, the Brandon when he was where he was way back when. And I always see my connections with students, even though many of my students don't look like me, have very, very, very different stories than I have, and stories that I probably will never be able to connect with, like stories of kids, you know, coming through the border in the middle of the night, carrying their, you know, their siblings. But that just empowers me to want to stay there. And I see my connection because my story is clearly connected to my why, and my purpose is constantly driven in that direction.
I love the idea that you said, you know, this idea that figuring out who you are in like looking at that success, looking at that power in relation to who you are, right? Not externalizing and not looking at everybody else. And I know you've mentioned the purpose, right? And it brings me back to that formula, right? With Jack Canfield in your book. So I'm thinking right now, and this is just a moment of vulnerability myself, right? Sometimes it's a challenge, right? Sometimes I log in to social media and I see some of my peers. I'm like, man, right? They're out doing these amazing things, Matt. Like, you know, there is that I guess human, basic human instinct to say, I'm going to compare myself, right? And there is that. If only I had this thing connected to my name. If only I had that thing. So can you tell the listeners a little bit, right? One, how do I begin to combat that? And you mentioned figuring out your why, your purpose. So maybe I'm stuck with that, right? How do I go about that process of figuring out what is my purpose? Who am I? How am I showing up? So that way I can ground myself and become comfortable with who I am and how I'm showing up, and not necessarily relying on all the added fluff or extrinsic things that I think would add value to me?
Oh, such a good question. Such a good question. And I would be lying to you if I sat here and said that I didn't do the same thing, because we all do. We all do, because the reason why is that we all want to be greater. We all want to be greater. We want to continue to do better. And I think that we need to understand that that is the reason why, because it's very easy to get frustrated by it, and it's even easier to get jealous by it. And if we find ourselves getting jealous by it, then we're really being impulsive inside of it all. We're really grabbing onto the first feeling which comes out, which is usually 80% of the time in any human's brain, is a negative thought. And that negative thought comes from the fear of not being able to get to that point that person may be right now. But what you don't see is you don't see that the hustle that person went through to get there, because it's always, always, always so much hustle, so much time, so much effort, and so much incredible hard work that constantly and easily can go unnoticed. And comparison is definitely the thief of joy. And I think what we really need to focus on, and I have a hard time with this as myself, but I've been really trying to work on it. And Tony Robbins, someone who I listen to an incredible amount, as well as Ed Milet, is like, they have the 2-minute rule, right? And the 2-minute rule is like, if I spend more than 2 minutes on this negative place or looking and scrolling through social media and kind of, you know, because one thought leads to another when you have these negative thoughts, you see one thing and you're like, man, I wish I was doing that. Then you scroll down. No, man, he's doing this too. Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, I suck. I'm such a loser. And, you know, that kind of, you can easily wallow and go into those places for longer than 2 minutes. So the first thing is, number one, a 2-minute rule is always a good place to kind of give yourself with that. But also it's having that gratitude, you know, understanding that, hey, that's pretty incredible that, you know, someone who I was looking at and comparing myself to was a great guy, Weston Kieschnick. He's been crushing it lately, and his book is blowing off the charts, and he's speaking everywhere. And I had the chance to have a conversation with him not too long ago. And his story is incredible, how he took a leap from one place to another and just kind of went all in this place, and it started to work out. So I have so much gratitude for someone to be able to share that story with me, because I didn't know that story. And I got to always say to myself that there's a great story behind this person. And that's where the podcast has been super helpful for me. And I'm sure it's been helpful for you, being able to actually have a 30 minute to 45 minute conversation with someone where they're talking about their story. You actually get to know so much more about them than you would with any social media post. Mm-hmm. And I think to always have that gratitude for saying to myself when I see something that they're doing is like, wow, there's an incredible amount of hard work, I imagine, that is going into this. And I see this person hustling and posting every day and really being vulnerable. And whether it's showing the daily videos or the daily thing or the places they are, whatever it is, they're putting an incredible amount of work behind that. And I have to have gratitude for that because I'm a fellow educator, and there's so many schools, there's so many students, it's a huge pool out there, and we all can have a piece of it. And I think it's important to understand that we're all doing it for the same reasons. We're not doing it to personally, financially benefit. We're doing it so that our schools wake up and continue to push forward and innovate and create great experiences for kids, because that's why we're all in it. So it's kind of like a go team approach that's wrapped around understanding their stories.
I love that, right? There's a mindset, like we're not in competition, right? If I want to see you do amazing things because we're in this field of education, and if you're doing amazing things, then you're contributing to this work that we're all part of, and you're making the space better, right? And it definitely is a mindset. And I would hope that we could get a lot better. And this is just an assumption because we're so quick to say it on social media. But like, if we could internalize that, if that was our true selves, there's a few people out there that I truly believe like that is where they sit. Like, you know, like Santiago, right? Meza, like, I truly believe incredible that this human. Man, every time you see, like, he's like, man, I am like, I love you for that. Like, that is genuine. Whereas there's sometimes other posts I see and I'm like, eh, do you really feel that way? Or are you just joining the crowd, right? Like if we adopted that mindset, I think it would be just a whole different realm in which we would all be operating.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, like, we all have our perception. Absolutely. And that's why I became addicted with having my own podcast. That the book led to the podcast, The Unlocking Unlimited Potential Stories. I started off with a couple podcasts, couple shows here, there, and everywhere. It was coming out. I was meeting great people. And then I kind of locked into, I'm going to do this and release an episode every single Monday at 7 a.m. I'm going to record. I'm going to batch record. I'm going to get these so I don't stress out having to do one every week and start to build up and have these. But the thing that happened was, whether it was people with a big following or a small following or no following at all, it was, I was now getting a chance to see the people that I admire and reach out to them. And 9 times out of 10, they would happily join me for a conversation. And even yourself, you were on the show way, way, way back when. Yeah, and yeah. But it gave me an opportunity to actually say, hey, I might be feeling a little bit of imposter syndrome, or I might be feeling a little bit of comparison, or I might be feeling a little bit of jealousy, but having the opportunity to hear their story and actually ask them about what goes on behind the scenes was something that was so empowering and helped me change that mindset and helped me realize that, hey, if I don't really know the story, then I really need to start to do better to learn more about the story, or maybe look at their website, or maybe look at the work they've done, or maybe even get their book and read, you know, some of the pages, because there are so many incredible people doing incredible things. And yeah, that jealousy might be jealousy because I want to do better. But at the end of the day, that jealousy has to also fuel your fire. It's got to push you to do better. You can spend all the time you want in the world wallowing and being worried and being upset because you're not there yet. But if you do it longer than 2 minutes, you're going to spend too much time because you should be doing something else. You should be taking that time. You should be writing those emails. You should be connecting. You should be writing those newsletters. You should be creating those podcasts, writing that book, developing that awesome keynote, whatever it is, because that's what it's really about in the end. That should fuel your fire so that you continue to be inspired, because I say it all the time, and you've heard it a million times, is we do rise by lifting others, and don't forget the power of your impact.
You know, and if I may, I think one of the other things is it's about, and I think you kind of touched on this, was the idea of perspective. And I was out having a lunch with my wife the other day. So I'll be in Atlanta next week. That, you know, time is always subjective when we do these podcasts, because I say next week now, but when the episode is like, oh, that was like 3 weeks ago. But, you know, Steve Baller, he's Stand Tall Steve.
Awesome guy.
I remember. Yeah. Well, last year I saw him in Vegas, right? I was in the audience. He was the keynoter. I was like, man, this guy's amazing. Right. And the other day we're driving home, literally and my wife and I were driving home from dinner on our anniversary. And, you know, the car is connected to your phone, right? And a little message pops up and it's Steve. And he's like, hey man, what's up? And I was like, like, babe, he's messaging me. He's like, who is that? Like, you know, and it was funny as we're having lunch, I'm chatting with him. And I was like, babe, I'm chatting with this keynoter. And she's looking at me like, why are you doing this? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, babe, this is a keynoter. Like, I just saw him in Vegas. I'm going to see him in Atlanta. And she's like, hun, you're a keynoter.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, wait. Right. And so when I talk about this perspective, so often we get caught up looking in one direction, you know, like you said, kind of in that awe and admiration of others. But while we're doing that, there are others, right, looking at us saying, they're doing phenomenal work, right? I want to be like them. I want to do the things that they're doing. So I think sometimes we have to gain that dual perspective. Like, yeah, while you are looking at other people, and it's the weirdest thing, but I'm sure like you've been there when somebody says it to you and you're like, wait, what, who, me? Like, knowing that, like, there are people, whether you're in the classroom, whether you're running a school, whatever it may be, there are people who see the work that you're doing and are trying to figure out, how can I do some of the amazing things that this person is doing?
Yeah. And no, absolutely. And Steve is an incredibly hardworking, and he has been doing the speaking thing for a long time. And that is one of the reasons you see him popping up everywhere, and you see the success that he's having and his amazing work that he's been doing, is because he has put in so much hard work behind the scenes. You know, a lot of work with the Jocelyn's Renaissance, and a lot of the work that he's been doing has just been the grind, the hustle. You know, it, like I said before, it always goes unnoticed, but it's always, always there. It's always there, because don't think that anybody just all of a sudden went viral one day because that was the first post they ever had or the first time they ever spoke. It was so many different times, and I could go through a list of different people that I've met and thousands of people, but there's so many people. It goes back to that idea of understanding their story and the importance of their story, and how, as you start to see, I mean, the amount of times that he has done the keynote that you saw and tweaked it and practiced it and learned it and changed it and made it better and tweaked this here and had people give him feedback. That work is what is really what's most inspiring about it. And that's, you know, it's interesting when you talk about the education space. If you think about, it's such a big industry. It is a huge space. And it's one of those spaces where it's not like we're all having the same product. Each speaker has their own uniqueness. It have their own brand. They have their own message. And schools and districts You know, they like to create like a toss salad of all these different ingredients and all these different people. And it's not like they're just looking for that one person to partner with. So, and there are so many different schools, public schools, private schools, universities, sports teams, etc., that are out there, that really one thing that I think sometimes people allow the comparison to really take over is when they actually think that their product, that they themselves have something that nobody else has. Because I don't think that. I really believe that there are so many incredible educators. If you just look in one school, if you look in your school right now, there's so many amazing teachers. And there's so many amazing teachers that don't have a book, that don't speak, that don't do any of the things that you and I are talking about. But if they did, they would be incredible as well. And I think that that's something, you know, first of all, it's that one little step that we've taken to go that extra mile, to write that book. God, that was so much hard work to write that book. And now to speak, and now to email and try and sell yourself, and to have those emails constantly be ignored or denied, or those conference proposals that you keep submitting and people accept or they don't accept. But the ability to keep going is why those people are doing well, because they don't stop.
Wow, Brendan, it has been a phenomenal conversation, right? This idea that leadership is this thing that we do, right? It is this thing that we strive for. And I think the key here, and something that I don't think I've ever heard it put this way, is that it's because I want to be better, right? It is because I'm so passionate about this work that I do. Hence the reason that I kind of look around and I compare myself, but I push myself to become better, and in using that attitude and perspective, not to necessarily be jealous of others, but to appreciate, you know, the work that they're doing, because they too are contributing to this. So I want to say thank you. You've allowed me, right, to walk away with some gems here that I'm definitely going to hang on to. So, you know, thank you for being on the show, but also just thank you for the amazing work that you are doing, right, that we just literally talked about. So thank you for being a phenomenal colleague in this space.
I appreciate that. And I can't remember who said it, but don't get bitter, get better.
Hey, there we go. That should have been on, you know, a lasso thing.
I think it was Inky Johnson, but I will definitely say that maybe it could be a Ted Lasso as well.
There we go. All right. Well, Brendan, it cannot be this long before we connect again, but I'm sure our paths will cross. Until next time, have an amazing summer, and have an amazing upcoming school year.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate the show. I appreciate your passion as well. And keep doing what you're doing, because I love it.
I want to thank you for listening to the Counter Narrative Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to like, subscribe, and of course, share it with friends and family. I'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show, so please leave a comment or two as well. Now, I'm not sure what platform you're using, but the show can be found on Anchor, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and plenty of other platforms. If the show isn't on your preferred site, let me know, and I'll be sure to get it up and running. This podcast is also featured on schoolrubric.com, where you can find educational articles, videos, and interviews with educators from around the globe. Be sure to connect with me and other listeners by following the show on Twitter at the CN Podcast and joining the show's Facebook group. Take care.